Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings and welcome to Mount Olympus. I am Hercules Invictus, and tonight I'm proud to bring you Sword and Sandal Cinema. But first, a quick legend of Hercules. This is called Hercules Conquers Atlantis, also known as Hercules and the Captive Women. After some good-natured brawling in a local tavern, King Androcles of Thebes, the mighty Hercules, and his son Hylas, plus their diminutive companion Timoteo, share an ominous experience. Tiresias, the seer of Thebes, informs them that the gods have spoken, and that a peril from the far west, beyond the straits, threatens all of Greece. Unable to rally his fellow kings or their collective citizenry, Androcles gathers an unwilling crew, and with the help of Hylas and Timoteo, drugs and kidnaps Hercules, who had decided to sit this one out. The sea voyage is doomed. Mutiny is followed by storm, then shipwreck. Hercules finds himself alone and afloat in misty waters. After praying to Zeus, he locates an island, defeats the shapeshifter Proteus, and rescues Ismene, princess of Atlantis. The protective mist along hid Atlantis from the eyes of intruders is also lifted. Making their way to Atlantis, they encounter many mysteries. Just who exactly is the instrument of true deific will in these particular circumstances? Why would Queen Antonia gleefully sacrifice her own daughter? What is King Androcles doing here? Why does he now have amnesia and firmly support acts of Atlantean imperialism? Why do evil queens always fall for Hercules, and why are they outraged when he predictably spurns them? With the guidance of Zenith, priest of Uranus, the blessings of Zeus, and some help from his companions, including Ismene, Hercules rescues Androcles, rekindles hope in the hearts of doomed mind slaves, leads an uprising, and thwarts the schemes of Queen Antonia, which include gaining personal immortality, plotting world domination, and misusing the blood of her god to create mutants and a master race of manly blonde clones. He also rights many wrongs, restores balance to the heavens, and almost single-handedly destroys the island continent. Greece is saved. Androcles is restored. Hylas and Ismene are going steady. Timoteo is unharmed, and Hercules is in good spirits. Together they sail toward the rising sun and home. I enjoyed this movie a great deal. Reg Park delivers one of my favorite portrayals of the Theban Hercules, and the many unfortunate appeals to and affirmations of the power of Uranus lent a much unintended humor to this fun mythic adventure. And now onward to Michael Delarussi. Greetings and welcome, Michael. How are you?
Good evening. It's great to be with all of you. And I enjoyed your review of one of my favorite Sword and Sandal films.
Mine
without
too.
A doubt. I'd like to just open up with a quote from Joseph Campbell, which I think is very inspiring. He said, "The call to adventure signifies that destiny has summoned the hero. And there's a hero in all of us." And I think that's a wonderful, wonderful quote by him.
Yes, it is. The hero's journey that Campbell really mapped out has been a powerful influence on my life, certainly in my spirituality especially. And for many years, and hopefully soon again, I'll be running something called the Cave of the Centaur or Chiron's Cave, where people can get modern training in living their hero path.
That sounds exciting. I'd like to open up the program with, as I always do, with a workout review.
Sure.
What we've been doing with our training, because I think that fits right in to the powerful influence that Sword and Sandal has had on us, specifically over the decades. I was wondering how your training is going, and how is your back situation?
Well, I'm in physical therapy. I started, and basically, in addition to several injuries, I have all sorts of problems with my spine. I have arthritis on the spine. I have bulging discs. I have stenosis. Yes. I have bone spurs. Mm-hmm. So it's affected my back especially. So I'm in physical therapy. I had to modify mm-hmm. my workout so that I could still work out, but not interfere with the physical therapy. So I'm handling lighter mm-hmm. weights, although I started progressive resistance, as I was saying last time. So I'm handling mm-hmm. heavier light weights and onwards. And then when I'm feeling better, I'll resume progressive resistance. I've been fiddling with muscle control, which requires no weights. That's an old system mm-hmm. of bodybuilding. Some of the things I learned from the Charles Atlas system, I've incorporated in them. I've incorporated mm-hmm. things from Derby. And now I'm thinking of bringing the X3 back into the equation.
I think that tool could probably be very useful at this point.
And thank you for recommending the back exerciser. That's proved to be phenomenally good.
I think that has provided some progress for you. I know much of what you've described, I also have. I was reading the MRI breakdown of it, my condition, the other day, and it just about duplicates yours.
Oh, wow.
Stenosis, yes, stenosis, bulging discs, arthritis, sciatica, curvature of the lower spine. Do you have sciatica? I mean, I'm sorry.
Curvature, yes. I have curvature, and that's been pretty difficult to work with. I'm trying to stand much differently, and that's causing a lot of aches and pains because I'm using unfamiliar muscles. Sciatica, I don't recall if they said sciatica. I've been doing, before the physical therapy, I've been doing YouTube physical therapy. I look up exercises. If everybody agrees that they're good, I do them. If people disagree on whether they're good or not good, I won't do them. So now I have real physical therapy to incorporate. So
we've had a double whammy here in my section of Bloomfield. I've lost my internet service on my iPhone. I've lost it. Been out about 2 hours now. It flashed on briefly. In fact, I was on your one of your pages, and I thought, okay, the problem is over. And then it flashed out again, and it says something to the effect that my server and to the public, I'm asking for your forbearance. My knowledge of these things is very minimal, to say the least. But it says Safari cannot open the page because my server cannot be found. I don't know exactly what that means, but it's been out about 2 hours now, and I'm hoping that by morning it will have been restored. It did flare, come back briefly. I don't know what that means, if that's a good sign or a bad sign. But
no, it's a good
then
sign.
It flared. The problem must be with them.
Yes, it happens here too intermittently that all of a sudden we'll lose the internet and we'll do all the things that, like disconnect it or press the buttons or do all the – there's all sorts of things you can try, and nothing will work. Mm-hmm. And then when we tried everything, it's just leave it alone. It'll come on when it comes on. And then usually on that box, a number of lights, I think 4 lights have to be lit. And if they're – we check, it's one of the things we check. If less than 4 lights mm-hmm. are lit, then there's a problem with them.
I see. Well, that's – provides me with some knowledge of it. You know, it's an ongoing thing. I often wonder, you know, how we ever grew up without all of this. Somehow we made it. We made it in spite of not having access to all of these things and all of this confusion, if you will, because sometimes I think it does add confusion to our lives. But nevertheless, we did make it. So that's a good thing. But,
yeah,
you know,
go ahead.
Hmm? No, go ahead and say it. I wanted to hear what you have to say.
No, it's just like with everything in life, there's good and there's bad. It's good to be able to get information right away about just about anything. That's mm-hmm. a good thing, but it eats up your life much more so than many things previously, many activities. You could compartmentalize mm-hmm. them and schedule them, but this is kind of like a, mm-hmm. a 24/7 type of thing, you know, that you're plugged into. And the phones now, too, they've become more like that. And they become computers, they become cameras, they become movie cameras. I just want to get calls or make calls. And that's pretty much all I want out of my phone. I don't need it to do all these things, but it does. And like you, I'm a bit behind the times. So.
Very much so. Which sometimes I think is a good thing in many ways. But I wanted to more or less capitalize on what you just said not too long ago about the myths and how they have enhanced your life. You know, I think looking back on it, the myths, I feel, are not an attempt to control the nature of civilization, but rather to bring them in accordance with it. And I think that's what the great Greek myths have done for us over the centuries. I think sword and sandal, of course, that's why I always to call it a time when the gods touch the earth.
Yes.
Because I think sword and sandal so much enlivened our youthful generation of the 50s and the 60s specifically. Although there was a time prior to that, and I'm hoping to get to touch on that perhaps in our next program, but the 50s and the 60s were the really golden age when the Greek myths were brought to the forefront of our consciousness in every possible way, through the silver screen, if you will. I think the focus of the segments very much, at least for me, was both spiritual, psychological, and all about physical transformation.
Yes.
And it taking us through the years, taking us through the decades. I mean, you look at the 50s, maybe probably the middle to late 50s, when the heroes began to present themselves. And then the 60s, of course, I think was the golden age of sword and sandal.
Me too.
Without any question and doubt. You know, I mean, and, you know, in so many ways, these films enhanced the golden rule. I mean, as you mentioned earlier, you know, they focused on determination, a universal grasp of right and wrong, and a spirit to correct injustice. I mean, what more can you ask as far as a positive message from cinema? And I think that's what Sword and Sandal did for us also. Most of all, it opened the pathways to imagination. You know, I think everyone I went to school with, especially obviously in history class specifically, they were all enlivened by the Greek tales and the Greek heroes. But for me, I don't think, where I went to school, not enough time was spent with our heroes, with these champions. And I learned the inspiration, most of the inspiration came from the films, came from the cinema. And of course, a lot of it was, you know, wasn't exactly historical, but nonetheless, it was the champions, the many champions that we were exposed to. That was the electricity, if you will.
Okay. The computer glitched, and it looked like it was going to cut off the show. So I think I fixed it. Mm-hmm. But if we get cut off, that's what happened. I'll have to restart.
All right. Okay. Are we on now?
We're still on. We passed the 90-second mark. They said that they would be terminating the show on. So I think we're okay.
Okay. So for me, anyway, I think nothing in cinematic history really can compare to the major personal impact it had on me as far as sword and sandal cinema. It was, and on a generation and beyond that, you know, I mean, the 70s, when the 70s, it began, the influence began to take place in the 70s, when bodybuilding began to, you know, expose itself, if you will, to the general public.
Yes.
And then, of course, we know in the 80s, there was an explosion of looking like our heroes. And suddenly the interest was at an all-time high. in terms of they wanted to look like and those champions. And, of course, at the time, there wasn't a rebirth, if you will. The film The Gladiator hadn't quite made its debut yet. So for most of the guys I went to the gym with, they talked about the films that you and I grew up with. Even though they were much younger, they talked about it. They would talk about Steve Reeves and some of the other films that their parents, their fathers had seen and introduced them to. Their fathers may have had weightlifting sets in the garage based on their exposure to our heroes, if you will. So, you know, it was a generational thing and something that you never forget. And it's always, right, always a part of your life. Where did your initial exposure come from in the very, very beginning?
Well, I'm Greek, and so part of my bedtime stories were the myths. So I knew about Hercules, and I knew about some of the ancient heroes. And on TV, on the little black and white TV we had in our home, and occasionally at the movie theaters, I would watch the Pepla at home in black and white, and in the movie theaters mostly in color. And they weren't identical to the myths I was told, and I wasn't told the real versions of the myths as a young kid. That was my exposure. And then there was the Hercules cartoon, The Mighty Hercules. So that was kind of like it became part of the same mythology. And the stories and the actors were different from movie to movie, but even if the story was a little bit changed, it was still kind of recognizable in the hero pattern. So there were tropes, you know, that you recognize after a while. So I began to realize, too, that these are stories, and they're powerful stories, and they're stories that have been with us for thousands of years. You know, people can use their creativity and tell them in different ways. So that prevented me from becoming like orthodox about stories, you know, like becoming too attached to a particular version. But there's a version where Hercules led the Argonauts, and it hasn't been, other than mentions of it, that it existed according to some people, there's references to it. Steve Reeves, though, for all that he was one of the Argonauts and he followed Jason, he was pretty much what the movie was about. So it was treated to Hercules being, you know, very important in the Argonaut story. And I'm a Lemnian Greek, so the Argonaut story is part of our history. Absolutely. That's always meant a lot to me.
When were you actually inspired to pick up a barbell? When did this coincide with the exposure you had with sword and sandal films per se, or when? I'm curious as to when you were inspired to actually first pick up a barbell and begin your weight training.
As a kid, my father used to lift weights, and he had cables and things like that. So when he wasn't, he didn't let me touch them because they were dangerous. But when he wasn't home, I pretty much exercised when I was by myself. You know, my mother was doing dishes. She went out to the store or something. I would use the weights and the cables. And I believe my father had the Charles Atlas course at one point, too. So I remember doing that as a kid. And so it was always a thing. My mother made me a peplum costume when I was relatively young, and then she made me another one when I was a teenager. So I used to wander around New York City in a like a Hercules getup. She also gave me a machete. So I had a real sword as I was walking around. Back then, things were very different in a lot of different ways. So nobody bothered me with my machete, and nobody arrested me or anything.
Well, thank goodness for that. Well, I think so. From a standpoint of enhancing the inner universe, I think these films encourage young people to look beyond the conventional world, if you will, to the sky, to the stars. I think to enhance their imaginations, to enhance the passion, to look for something more. And I think the Peplum era certainly helped to do that. Even if you think about it, science fiction back in the 60s when I was growing up, I have so many of the films that Brian Walker talks about. You know, the Grade B science fiction films, but today are considered underground classics, if you will. But they weren't as, shall we say, influential as the Sword and Sandal films were. Sword and Sandal really stood out during that decade and, again, influenced especially young people in so many different ways. Of course, I remember during the late 60s and maybe the early 70s, I know my gym teacher, I went to Irvington High School at the time, he warned us against any kind of weight training.
Yes,
and I can still remember his words. He said, "Don't lift weights; it'll only make you muscle bound."
I wish it was that easy. Yeah, it requires hours and hours and hours and slow and steady progress, but can be easily lost if you stop doing it. So, yeah, they used to tell me too; it'll make me muscle bound, as if that was a bad thing to my young mind. But yeah, I knew from exercising that it didn't do that.
Mm-hmm.
And I was so very dedicated and voted
right,
years.
Well, you know, in many ways, that shows you how much they knew. They didn't know much about the activity themselves, obviously.
Yeah, the Sword and Sandal Cinema, and that's why I started the groups on Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
And now they're going to be part of what I'll be doing on like cable TV. Either here in northern New Jersey or in Manhattan. Before the pandemic, so many things were going to happen, and then the pandemic came. Before the pandemic, I was meeting with a cable station here in northern Jersey, and I've had this idea about a Peplum show, very different than how we do it now. And they loved the idea. We were having meetings and all sorts of stuff. We had a plan for advertising and then, again, the pandemic happened and everything kind of ceased. So hopefully I'll find a home for that idea and we could move into a whole new dimension.
Well, that would be exciting. I'll be looking forward to seeing that once it comes to fruition. You know, some of these physiques, what I'd like to dedicate for a few minutes here, if I can, one of the more unique looking physiques in Sword and Sandal was presented to us by Dan Vadas.
Yes.
Dan Vadas was a very unique, he was born of Greek descent.
Yes.
And with the lineage is tracing back, and I don't know if I'm pronouncing this correctly, to the island of Chios.
Chios.
Chios. Okay.
Chios.
Thank you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
In the Aegean Sea. He was a former U.S. Navy sailor and bodybuilder and was a member of the Mae West Muscle Man Review in the late 50s. I remember that well. He was very brawny, handsome, durable, at 6'4", curly brown hair, bluish-green eyes, and what amounted to, they say, was a very pleasant demeanor. They said that Dan's most memorable role was The Triumph of Hercules. I happen to really like that film, 1964, in which he portrayed Hercules battling golden giants. That was a very imaginative plot, if you will, and trying to save his princess love from an evil relative. The film was quickly followed by Hercules the Invincible, retitled Son of Hercules in the Land of Darkness, another excellent film. And the Sons of Hercules television package by Embassy Pictures. What made Vada stand out from other athletes and bodybuilders in these films was his speed, dexterity, agility, and all-around athletic durability that he brought to these films, which further energized what might otherwise have been considered ordinary fight scenes. After Sword and Sandal films, he moved into spaghetti westerns, then became a reoccurring face in Clint Eastwood movies, such as High Plains Drifter and Every Which Way But Loose. I don't remember seeing him in those, but obviously he was there. He died June 11th in Lancaster, Florida, in a car in the desert. His death was considered accidental drug overdose, which is very tragic. So he had quite a resume. Some of his films were Colossus of the Arena, The Rebel Gladiator, The Ten Gladiators, Hercules the Invincible, The Triumph of Hercules, and Spartacus and the Ten Gladiators. He had quite a resume, and from what his Pierce had said he was probably one of the most incredible actor athletes that had been on the scene at that time. In fact, Samson Burke, and Gordon Mitchell lived together and worked together on films. So I thought his physique was very unique looking, a little bit different from what we were accustomed to seeing.
Yes, he was.
Another way to say that is you knew you were looking at Dan Bartus's physique.
What a tribute. I think I made a group to Dan Bartus, a shrine. Some of the groups that are lesser frequented, I have tributes for those who are still alive, and mm-hmm. I have shrines to those who have passed on, and I'm updating the shrine. Mm-hmm. And I think I came across Dan Bartus's name, so I created that at some point. I'll be updating all of them.
That would be great, because they all had, in some future date, perhaps we can touch upon this, but they all had unique aspects of their physiques, which
yes.
was certainly an influence to me. And maybe someday we can break that down and discuss it.
We only have three minutes left.
Yes.
I had a few cancellations this week. If you're free tomorrow, Thursday, or Friday, let me know, whenever we could do a show, continue this. And also I wanted to talk about the inspiration of Sword and Sandal Cinema. I'm trying to integrate that into one of my groups a little bit more directly.
Mm-hmm.
The Heraclides, I don't know how, in English, Heraclides, or I don't know how to say it, but the Heraclidae is how they spell it. But in Greek, it's Heraclides, which means mm-hmm. the family of Hercules or the house of Hercules or the descendants of Hercules. I've been building that. So I want to have a conversation with you. You're in that group, so you pretty much know what I'm doing.
Okay, that would be wonderful. I will definitely keep you informed on that. Thank you so much.
And how can people tap into all the wonderful things you're doing? Because you, in addition to all you're doing with Sword and Sandal Cinema and you're exercising, you also have a ministry and you help people with their health. So you're very active. How can people contact you and tap into your services?
Well, they can write to me at Michael Del Rossi, Box 129, Caldwell, New Jersey, 07006. I have a prayer ministry. They can write to me. I utilize the fundamental white light of the Christ, if you will, the Anointed One, which I believe is the foundation of all things. And I put all names in white light and affirm for their good health and well-being, body, mind, and spirit. And I always write back. So they can contact me, Michael Del Rossi, 129 Caldwell, New Jersey, 07006. I'd like to also mention, too, I've just finished getting ready my second edition of my poetry collection, One Passion Beyond. I think it's, if I can say humbly, it's an excellent poetic collection dealing with the parallel worlds, whether it be spiritual, cosmic forces, spirit survival, UFOs, the living Christ, the Tao of nature, romantic essence that we have all experienced in our lives. We cover just about many topics, many of them paranormal. And that's available for $10 a copy to check a money order, Box 129, Caldwell, New Jersey, 07006. We just finished printing our second edition. I'm very proud of it. We deal with the parallel reality that we all are all connected to, and I think they will enjoy it.
They definitely will. I know I enjoyed the previous edition that you had sent me. Before we say goodbye, I also started having meetings at my home. We used to have them in the library, but then the library was closed to the pandemic when it opened, and I started again. They closed for renovations because I got this grant So I'm having them in my home. So if you can find your way to Tenafly, you're more than welcome to come.
Thank you. I wish I could. But if that time ever arises, I will certainly let you know.
And I would appreciate that. Michael, thank you. It's always a pleasure to speak with you. It always brings me down nostalgic pathways and things I feel very powerfully about. So thank you for that, and I look forward to our next conversation, be it on or off the air.
Thank you. I'm so proud to be able to call you a friend and a colleague, and I'm so happy to be involved here. Thank you so much.
Same here. Take care, my friend.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you, sir. And now another brief legend of Hercules before we start on the second part of the show. Since Plato first penned his foundational works, many a tale teller has spun a fantastic yarn of long ago times and set it in ancient Atlantis. One of the most recent was a television series that explored the lost continent through the lens of Greek mythology. Epic heroes like Jason and Hercules, along with historical figures like Pythagoras, adventure in a land not unlike mythic Minoan Crete, and revisit the classical legends. Though unseen, Poseidon remains all-powerful and forever present. Alas, the series was not renewed for a third season, which is unfortunate, as it was leading to the voyage of the Argo. But the two-season adventure is now immortalized on Blu-ray, DVD, and through streaming. And we already reviewed the first two episodes. Now we'll do the third and the fourth. These are very short reviews, but they contain spoilers, and they're more my impressions than reviews. Episode number 3 of the first season, Boy of No Consequence. Hercules admits to having feelings for Medusa, and Princess Ariadne discovers that she has feelings for Jason. The three companions are condemned to the bullpit for preventing Hyptarion, Ariadne's intended, from further abusing a peasant. Despite Queen Pasiphae's use of sorcery, the heroes triumph with some help from Medusa. And episode 4, Twist of Fate. Jason, Hercules, and Pythagoras discover an abandoned baby while hunting. With the help of Medusa, they unravel the mystery of the child's parentage. There's lots of intrigue and adventure as the Oedipus cycle takes root in Atlantis. And there we must pause for now, but it will be continued on several of our shows. And now, officially, we start part 2 with Setna of Kemet, also known as Setna Comwest, also known as Michael K. Waterman, a multidimensional Egyptian priest. Greetings, my friend. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. I'd like to dedicate tonight's episode to the memory of John Foss, who was one of my Anubis priests, who passed away recently, and whose funeral I will attend coming Thursday. And so, John, I say happy voyages into the next part of your lives. Thank you, and I'm sorry we're going to miss you. Now
I mourn your loss, and of course, the program is officially dedicated to him. If you send me his information, I'll add it to the program description.
I will. His birthday would be the 22nd of 21st of September. He was a Virgo Libra cusp, I believe they call it, and he was only 42 years old.
So young.
And I'm very, very grieved at his loss. Tonight I want to celebrate, on the other hand, something more positive and fun. In 1945, the beautiful actress Maria Montez starred in a movie called Sudan. It's also secondarily called The War of Egypt. It's very loosely based on the last few years of the pharaoh Sesostris and his daughter. They changed the names of everybody. I guess Hollywood producers didn't like them. They changed them. Maria Montez's character should have been called Sit Hathor Yunet. However, they call her Princess Nyla. Maria Montez was an incredibly beautiful, glamorous Latin sirene, I'll call her. She was a sensation and very beautiful. There were two other superstars of the day that were in there. John Hall, who often was seen in many of these desert epics. He was the desert fox at one of them, and he was with Rita Hayworth, and Flame over Araby. There were many, many other great people. Her lover later is named Turhan Day. He plays the Egyptian desert thief and bandit called Harua, who, of course, the princess is going to fall in love with. The other one that's very funny that's in there is misplaced, is the character of Nebka, and he is Andy Devine. Oh, and a very strong guy, boys like this, and God. And he was well known for his Western characters more than everything else. I was very surprised to see him in ancient Egyptian and sort of more of Arabian Nights costumes. And that's what I want to say. This movie reminded me very much of The Thief of Baghdad. It had that kind of feel. The girls were all in veils, and there were a lot of belly dancing scenes. There's even a part where in the middle of the bazaar, and you can't see him, but Bing Crosby is singing in the background, which is ludicrous.
That is funny.
Andy Devine was bad enough, but Bing Crosby crooning in the background of this, desert town was really very funny. You also have George Zucco, who often played a lot of villains in a lot of different movies. You'll also remember him briefly in some of the Buster Crab movies and TV with Flash Gordon or Buck Rogers. I almost lost it there. Two of my old favorite black and white heroes. I loved those series when we were children.
Me too.
You know, when they had those terrible spaceships that made that noise as they flew across the sky.
You could see the strings and the sparklers.
It was so bad, it was good. And the flying lion men and Princess Ardella and all the other crazy things. And, of course, my favorite hero was Ming the Merciless. Great. Well, George Zucco plays Horedef, who should be Hordedef, actually, but that's okay. He plays the evil Grand Vizier. Why is there always an evil Grand Vizier in all of these kind of movies? It's always the villainous evil Grand Vizier. So what happens is that beautiful Nyla's father goes out to attack the Sudanese and conquer the borders. And, of course, he comes back tied to his chariot with an arrow in his chest and a flag that says it's from the thieves of the desert. Harua's people. So the princess, which is kind of strange, decides to go out on her own, and she's going to go confront this Harua. Now, I mean, more ludicrous. Here's a beautiful princess dressed in relatively Egyptian / Arabian Nights kind of costume. She has on a sequins Egyptian collar kind of, and something that Hedy Lamarr would have worn in Algiers. It's a very romantic, beautiful outfit. Is it ancient Egyptian? No. But this is a movie fantasy, so you just have to suspend that. The background I recognize from Claudette Colbert's Cleopatra.
Mm-hmm.
And there were other costumes. Well, you know the movie, so you look and you're like, oh, my goodness. And there's a lot of other good things that go on. But so she, Princess Nyla, runs out into the desert, and, of course, evil Horedef sends out a guy named Setna, which I was kind of resentful of.
Yeah, I would be too.
I was kind of like, hey, wait a minute. And Setna goes with a band of people to chase the princess, and they capture her. She falls down off a horse in an oasis, and they grab her, and she's branded, and she's hooked up with a bunch of slavers. And she's now a slave. You're going to make her a slave. And somehow or other, she gets away. And she gets on another horse, and she takes off. And she runs into John Hall and Andy Devine, Dr. Now. And I can't help it. It was so funny. So there, she's laying unconscious in the middle of an oasis. And she's got an S branded on her shoulder, her arm. Now, anybody else I know would have screamed in bloody pain having a white hot branding iron attached to your arm. You know, that's burning your arm. And she doesn't scream at all. She doesn't let out a shriek or anything, whatever. So she's there, she is, and they see that she's a slave, and she's got this amazing golden horse, and she's dressed in more jewelry than RuPaul can wear in a year. So, I mean, and she's a slave. I'm looking at the costume. I mean, the way the woman was dressed, you know she's noble and royal and, you know, but she's got a brand of a slave girl. So the whole thing doesn't make any sense, but it's funny and it's a romp. And anyway, in the meantime, so Don Hall and Andy Devine hook up with her, and they're going to run around and they're going to help her get to the city of Kemet, which is even funnier, which Kemet means Egypt, so the city of Egypt. And she's going to run and go back, and she's going to, you know, get the guards to take over and subdue the evil villain, whoever caught her. She didn't know who it was yet. So meanwhile, there's a huge train banquet scene, and now the evil George Zuko, Haredes, is sitting on the throne as a pharaoh. They said that she was captured by bandits, and she's whatever, and she's dead. So there's a whole belly dancing scene, and the pharaoh, of course, is sitting on the throne. Meanwhile, the girl gets, you know, she's dancing and what have you, and Harua, the hero now, the villain hero, sees her, and he rescues her from these slave people. There's Andy Devine and John Hall, and she get all captured again, and they're going to be sacrificed. Death by a thousand rips. They're going to be tied to a pole, and four horses are going to rip them apart. And, of course, they're going to take Andy Devine first. He goes, I'll be very happy to go third. You know, so it's funny that way. And Harum's, and she doesn't know he's Harum yet because she's after him. She wants to, you know, get him because he murdered her father. Anyway, they escape. They get to Harum's camp. There's this whole, you know, 1940s dance number, and it's very beautiful. And she learns that he's Harua. And then she escapes, and she gets to the palace. And the guards and the evil vizier are all in on it. Like, don't tell her anything. You know, don't tell her that I've taken over the country. And they're going to go get Harua. And so Andy Devine and John Hall find her, and they're all in the palace. And Andy Devine is now laying in a big pillowed, you know, bed, and he's eating grapes, and he's having a grand old time with all these beautiful girls. And John Hall is in love with her. But, of course, he's, you know, he's the number two. There's always a guy that's in love with the girl that she wants somebody else. So, meanwhile, in the desert, when she was with Harua, she falls in love with the bandit guy, Harua, not knowing that she's the pharaoh's daughter and that she has a plan to have him killed.
Wow.
You following me so far? It's kind of complicated. Anyway, so Harua goes to rescue her. And, of course, he's captured, and they're going to have him executed. And in the meantime, there's a ring that's found, which is the pharaoh's ring, and it wasn't wearing it when he was killed. He went out into the desert and got it. And when he brought his body back, the ring wasn't there. So now Maria Montez, Princess Nyla, has the ring on her finger, and she knows Harua didn't do this now, and she can't figure out who did. Of course it was the Grand Vizier. So, again, they escape, and they get to... She's tied up, and she, you know, then she gets captured again, and she's tied up, and Harua escapes, and of course he's going to come with his army, and they're going to save the day. And so they find out that the evil Grand Vizier Argedef is the one that did the killing, and he's got his army, the Royal Egyptian army, after the princess and after Harua the Bandit King. And he comes to her rescue, and of course they get to his stronghold. She gets to his stronghold, Harua's stronghold, and she's with the evil Grand Vizier, and he's coming to kill Harua. And there's a whole scene where he knows the secret path. That's why they don't kill her. She knows the secret path to get to Harua's tribe and his hideout. And there's a whole scene at the end where they're walking and walking with the horses, hundreds of horses, and above them are these guys with huge, big carts of rocks. And, you know, all of a sudden you've got guys looking up and the rocks are falling on them. And the rocks are bouncing because they're foam rubber. And you can tell they're foam rubber. And it's really kind of fun. And she, of course, escapes. She gets out of the way. And there's a gigantic sword fight between Harua and the evil Grand Vizier. And, of course, good always triumphs over evil. And he kills the vizier. And, you know, the guy falls off a sand dune down into the whatever, and the next valley. And she, of course, the girl realizes that she forgives him. She realizes that he didn't kill her father, that the Grand Vizier did. And everybody else that's in the film that was evil got rocks thrown on them. You know, people are always throwing. Yeah, they're all under a pile of rocks. And Andy Devine and John Hall go off in the sunset. They're alone, and they're upset. John Hall's upset because he doesn't get the girl. But Sirhan Bey, who I believe is a Middle Eastern person himself, and beautiful, beautiful Maria Montez, are riding off into the sunset. And it's funny because I'm wondering where she's going. She's the queen of Egypt, and he's a bandit. And here's the funny part. Harua becomes, in reality, becomes a pharaoh, whose name is Hordedef. And he does marry the pharaoh's daughter. And they did. They didn't run off to the desert together, but they started to build different cities, like reestablishing Memphis and Hyrcanopolis, which you'd be good for because that was for Hermes, and many other great cities. And so this is kind of a lopsided telling of the truth. There was an evil Grand Vizier. Princess Hathor Unit did save her father's throne. Unfortunately, in reality, the real princess dies not too long later of consumption. She and her treasures, and they're amazing treasures, can be seen in the Metropolitan Museum. I was just there 2 weeks ago, and I'm marveling. There's a lot of you can see beautiful things that are amethyst and gold and turquoise and cornelian and alabaster, beautiful pieces of jewelry, very intricate pieces. And there is a crown that has many, many horned impala, like a desert impala, a desert antelope. And they say that this is from her adventures in the desert. So I thought that was kind of interesting. Here you've got this outrageous, you know, glamorous 1940s epic with Bing Crosby and Andy Devine. And you've got this incredibly beautiful setting. And it is more a little bit, the costumes are a little more Arabian Nights. They're a little more further on in history. We're really talking about 12th Dynasty Egypt, and that's about 1670 B.C., you know, like 3,000, like 2,000 or somewhat years plus before B.C., before the birth of Christ. So this is kind of an interesting thing. I like the costumes. It's a beautifully done movie, very glamorous, very World War II was over. So this is a fantasy escapism, and it does have the sword fighting that Swords and Sandals are famous for, and it does have the bodybuilders and all the, you know, beautiful women. Every Hercules movie had beautiful, beautiful women, didn't they? Yeah. Hercules? Lord, gorgeous. All like Gina Lola, Bridget, or lookalikes, right? They're all incredibly beautiful. And Maria Montez is no slouch. She's a very beautiful woman. She's in the same genre as another superstar of those times, which was Yvonne DiCarlo, who did a lot of these kind of movies also. Of course, she's most famous for being Lily Munster. But yes. Maria Montez was a dancing, singing, glamorous, beautiful ingenue, leading lady, beautiful thing. And I think remembered for that in her time, because she was always being a captured princess. I know there was another movie called Scheherazade, which you don't see very often, where she plays Scheherazade, and it's like the beginning of the Arabian Nights. And it's funny, a lot of the costumes that I saw in that movie were in this movie. So that was kind of interesting.
Yes, it is. You always find such interesting movies, and you tell the story in a very interesting way as well.
A little crazy, but then that's me. I don't want, I made a saying a long time ago. when you make people laugh, they listen. And when they're listening, they're learning. And that's they're really listening to you. So I've always done everything with a little humor in it. You know, I mean, life is sad enough in some cases. And I try to look at the brighter side, the funnier side, the positive side of things. You know, that there is, this is terrible. I know I have to run to this funeral on Thursday, but people I haven't seen in a long time and people that were very close to John, I'll see them. So he's, by his dying, he's brought us all together. And so and that's the good in this bad situation. And I'm kind of taken back by the whole thing. This is the second death I've heard of in the last 2 weeks that affects me directly. A great stylist, his name was Anthony Nardone, a great, great hairdresser. He's also, he died yesterday of a heart failure. And this is a guy that was par excellence in color and styling, great sense of humor, and by the way, a great alchemist. Great, I was going to bring him with us into the group, and a great, you would have liked him. And I'm sorry that now he'll have to look at us from the other side.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Is there anything you need to think about or talk about besides, I know we have a few minutes left.
Yeah, we have 8 minutes left. No, basically I'm looking forward to connecting as soon as we can. And
yes.
I had some ideas for specials. One, a special on the wands, and then another attempt at a teaching instructional video. So we, you know, practice and we get that under our belt.
Now, I want to talk about that. I'm going to have my own show, as you know, on MNN
yeah.
Network. So I will be able to show things more clearly with use of ritual tools and incense and candles and the deities and such. And I won't have to be holding the camera or having it sit somewhere. I'll actually have a cameraman working there with me. So
yes.
Things will work much better. And when we produce the shows that way, and I kind of like to have you around there. It's important because you're you. I don't want to do anything without. I don't want to do anything without Hercules, folks. He really is Hercules in a lot of ways, not just super strength, but he's got a heart as big as his muscles. He's an amazing man.
Kind words, thank you.
No, honest words. I'm a New Yorker. I'm blunt. I tell people exactly what I think. But this will help a great deal more.
Yes, that'll work.
I'm very excited.
And you'll get a bigger audience on MNN, and you're doing something very different. So it'll cause a reaction.
Well, I blame my beautiful friend Diana Montford. If it wasn't for her, I wouldn't have thought of this. And
she's wonderful.
A great lady. I know her many, many years, and she's the culprit. I blame her for being as wonderful as she really is. I was going to say, we're probably going to get to the point now where we need to do credits and such, eh?
Yes, we have to move in certain directions. I spoke with someone who might be able to help me with that earlier today. So let's keep our fingers crossed. It might happen sooner rather than later. But I have a list of things I need to do. I also sent you a
Hercules,
newsletter.
That would be wonderful. I want to get my products and my services off the ground with Phona Wizard, because Phona Wizard is moving. It's doing great things. My products come under a name, Ushavti Limited. Ushavti means little helper, or I will answer. And I named a cat of mine years ago Ushavti. So I was gonna use her face and on a mummy form as my my trademark. It's kind of cool.
Yes, the Greek Egyptian papyri came up earlier today, and the conversation was about companions. So synchronicity there.
Always. I mean, you were talking about crystals, and I brought you a crystal. I also have,
yes,
for Hercules himself, a gigantic wand which has a Herculean crystal cluster in it, which when he puts it in his hand, he's going to feel the energy of Zeus in it. And it's just funny. We were talking earlier about my sister who is Epithia, a high priestess of Apollo, and very much a very strong one. And her energies are coming back stronger than ever as she also reaches her birthday, as mine is coming up in 9 days, which is scary. But
happy early birthday.
And I know yours is coming up too, so there we go.
Now mine is past. It's not coming up for nearly three quarters of a year.
Well, happy birthday on the other side of the world.
Thank you, and I would love for people to know how they can reach you and how they can tap into what you're doing and how they can make use of your many services.
To get in touch with me, the best way is to go on Facebook, Michael K. Waterman, Facebook.com. You can get me on my email address for all of my services and all of my classes and such, mkwaterman@icloud.com. You can reach me on my phone. It's open for all my work and services, 516-650-3691. You can reach me on Instagram or on TikTok also. Call me. I'll give you all that information. That's fine. I do have classes I'm teaching in ancient Egyptian religious ritual. I am also, the tape went loose. And I'm also, of course, with Phono Wizard doing my metaphysical services and spiritual things. And I am an ordained minister. I do marry people. I do what's called hand parting, which is kind of a divorce ritual, and child naming, and past life regressions. A lot of times when you're using that, to really quickly say, sometimes people have pain in their bodies this life, and it's because of something that happened in a past life. For instance, with you, Hercules, I know that in one of your past lives, you were actually stabbed. I don't think you died, but you stabbed with a spear, a long spear. And that's what's cutting into your spinal cord right now. And that I wanted to tell you for a long time, but I saw that.
Well, thank you for sharing that with me. It explains a lot.
It's an Etruscan wound. It's a time where you were in a battle and you were attacked, I believe, by a Macedonian because of the phalanx, because of the spear. And I know that's what it was. It's probably during the Alexandrian Wars, where Philip and Alexander were fighting the Athenians and the other Greeks who were trying to fight and not be under the thumb of the Macedonians. And they were for 300 years.
Yes, I have affinities with those times, as you know.
Yes, I do. Well, the Macedonian wars were bloody, disgusting, horrible. You know, the Greek city-states were fought independently with the Macedonians. They didn't get, it wasn't until Alexander joined them all together that there was a united Greece. They were all fighting cities.
On that note, we have about a minute left. I want to thank you so very much, Setna, despite your personal tragedy. You came on the show tonight. I really appreciate it. And I mourn your loss. And I look forward to our connecting in the very near future. I sent you a copy of the newsletter supplement. It has kind of like the agenda that I'll be discussing at tomorrow's meeting and also 2 weeks in the Zoom meeting with whatever updates there are. So if you have any questions, just ask me whenever you have time.
Well, we have to just figure out when the availability will be for Setna Speaks, as I cannot do Thursday because I will be attending the funeral.
Of course. Understood. Thank you, my friend. As always, an awesome experience interacting with you. And I look forward to our next interaction, be it on or off the air.
Thank you, Hercules. Have a good night.
You too. And thanks to all our listeners, whether you clicked on a link and found yourself here, whether you called in and you're patiently waiting in our queue, whether you'll be checking us out later on demand. Until next time, this is us wishing you joyous journeys and amazing adventures. And again, thank you, Setna.
Welcome.